Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2, the safe space created for Black women, by Black women, to strip away the taboo of talking about mental health. You'll hear from mental health professionals and advocates, as well as Black women sharing their experiences as we break down the complexities, explore ways to heal, and support each other. My name is Ashley, I'm your host. Whether you're a seasoned regular or this is your first time tuning in, thank you so much for your support. Now let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2. It's your host, Ashley. I hope y'all are doing good. I hope everybody's enjoying the summer or whenever you're listening to this. Hopefully it's sunny. We have a familiar face back. She's done a couple episodes. You'll probably recognize the voice. You'll definitely recognize the name. Dr. Chandra Smallwood is back on the pod. So welcome back. Oh, bless you.
Girl, I got those allergies going like you, man.
I know. I think yours are worse today than mine. My nose is just, I had to run out and get some tissue just now. Welcome back. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to have you back on the pod. It's been a minute since we've been on the mic together, so finally we're back.
Yes, it's been a minute for sure.
if this is your first time listening to an episode with Dr. Chandra, I will tell you a little bit about her. So she is a pharmacist. Shout out to all the black women pharmacists out there. she is also an anxiety coach. She has had anxiety for over 20 years. And she's also got some really cool projects coming on. So we'll find out about that a little bit later. But Dr. Chandra, tell us everything. Did I miss anything? I feel like I missed something.
Oh, I'm a mom.
And she's a mom. How did I forget that one? I just mentioned that before we got on here. But as we are going to jump into Fast and Curious, she's done this multiple times now. So we're just going to go and I'm just going to throw out some questions. And we're just going to get to know you a little bit more. 3 minutes. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. What is the last movie that you watched?
The last movie that I watched? Like in a theater or at home?
Oh, either or. Because, you know, barely anybody goes to theaters. Except for me.
I did go see The Little Mermaid because it came out on my birthday.
Oh, happy, very belated birthday.
Thank you.
How did you like it?
I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised that it was like cookie cutter to the cartoon, the original cartoon. I like that a lot. I don't like when, you know, they change it up and you're just like, what?
Yeah, like that's not even the same thing. Like creating new places.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think they took like a song out or something, but other than that, yeah, she did such a great job. It was really cute.
Yeah.
I think the prince really could have been cuter, but.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
It was like, y'all should have recast for the prince. Okay, if you could have cast anybody for the prince, who are you picking?
Look, I will pick that guy from the first Bridgerton. He is fine.
Oh, that's a good one. I was going to say Damson Idris, but, I mean, he works too.
Oh, yeah. 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 He does work, for sure.
Yeah, I would have went. I could also do like a Tom Holland, like a nice little short king type thing, you know, short prince.
Yeah, I think some of the guys, they would have had too much sexual chemistry though, so it was probably a good Disney choice.
Yes, that's a good point actually. I didn't even think about that, because if Damson's on set, it's not going to be The Little Mermaid anymore. It's going to be a different story. Okay.
Right, we're like, wait.
Wait, what next scene? Little Mermaid 2 coming out soon.
Right.
Yeah, I saw Little Mermaid. Yes, I know, right? HBO only, no Disney. Don't give HBO any other ideas, or Max, whatever they're called now.
Yeah, Max. It's like, how'd you go from HBO to Cinemax without the Cinna? Like, you're just Max.
Now you're just Max. Like, are you a tech company? What are we doing?
Right. Yeah.
Interesting branding choice. But hey, I don't get paid to make those choices, but weird. Okay. What is, if you had to eat one thing every day for the next 30 days, what are you eating? Like one meal.
Oh, Susie. Okay, so I'm pregnant right now. For people that don't know, I'm in my third trimester. Look, I can have chicken, rice, and beans every day for all meals. Rice and beans.
Oh, that's actually pretty good, though. Like, I mean, I feel like you wouldn't get bored of that because you could just season the beans a different way, season the chicken a different way.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Oh, and you're in Cali, so, you know, if you don't want to cook it, you could always go get good rice and beans from somewhere.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't cook it. Because I don't make, you know, because we're by Mexico, so, like, there's so many Mexican restaurants and stuff. I can't make rice and beans like that. I don't know what they're adding. Probably it's not good for me. I don't care, but it's good.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I know you said you're pregnant. We were going to drop that bomb in a little bit, but we dropped it now. Oh, so
sorry.
No, it's okay. Do you have any weird pregnancy cravings?
No, I don't have weird crave. Well, I was eating tamales and eggs every day for a little while. Okay. That was kind of strange. It's not that I have weird cravings. It's just that I always crave something different, like In-N-Out cheeseburgers, like randomly. Like, or if you say something, I'll crave it. Like, whatever you say, it's like my mind wants it. But the weirdest part is sometimes I'll eat things, and right after I'm done eating it, I feel disgusted by the fact that I just ate it.
Really?
Yeah.
Even if you ate it prior to being pregnant?
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. I've never heard of that.
Yeah,
so
no.
So if I said peanut butter and pickles, are you going to start craving peanut butter and pickles? Or is that
too I far? Have both of those, so.
No. Really? Do you eat them together?
No.
Oh, I don't know. I've never been pregnant, so I don't know. I don't know how this thing works. I don't know.
No, like my first pregnancy, I craved cupcakes.
Okay.
Like all the time. Oh, this amazing. One, I crave entrees. Like I crave meat and things like that. Like I couldn't eat oily chicken with my first baby. Oily chicken was like disgusting.
It made you
dark
sick?
Meat. Mm-mm. Yeah.
That's so interesting. Okay, what's the biggest difference between this pregnancy and your first one?
I had nausea this pregnancy. I didn't have any nausea the first pregnancy. That was the biggest difference. And this pregnancy, I was super depressed.
Yeah.
But that was probably due to other reasons that we could talk about if you want to. But yes. I was super emotional this pregnancy. Yeah. And more tired. But I mean, I'm also older.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 years older, so that could be why too. So it's hard to say, but yeah, the nausea. Whew, Lord.
What is okay? Last question. If you could invite anybody to like your favorite, well, let's just say you know you're getting like chicken, rice, and beans from like your favorite place, and you're having like a cozy little dinner, and you can invite four people. Dead, alive, or fictional, who are you inviting?
Beyonce.
Beyonce, 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 and Beyonce.
Basically. Beyonce. You get this pregnancy brain. Michelle Obama.
Okay.
My mom.
Mm-hmm.
Who's still alive. And anyone dead? I love Rosa Parks, so I would have to invite her everywhere. I feel like table. I want to talk to her.
That's a good table. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like that would be good.
What's your favorite Beyonce song or album? Because I feel like when I ask the Beehive what their favorite song is, they're like, ugh. Like, what's your favorite album?
My favorite album is probably, is it called Four?
Get out of here. That's my favorite Beyonce album.
It's so good.
It's so
I was
good.
Listening to it the other day.
Oh, it's so good. That song with Andre 3000 is like one of my favorite songs.
It just is like a happy day in like an album. I just love it.
Yeah. I feel like she was in a really good mood when she made the album.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we went through a lot of mood swings in the albums after. So great albums, but emotional roller coasters
after that. Oh, yeah, like this, man. Like this last album for the tour. I feel like she was back happy again, but it just, I don't know. It just wasn't for me. No,
wasn't
as
for
much. I mean, it was a good album. Don't get me wrong. If I wasn't pregnant, I would totally be on her tour somewhere in the world. But
yeah,
I don't know.
For you. It was definitely different. I liked it because it was like very house infused, and I love house music. So I like the little nod that she's doing to house music and her uncle and all that. But I still love Four, and then I love, I mean, can we just call Lion King one of her albums? Because, like, I love that whole album.
I think that this one just wasn't as emotional. So that was
like
good
emotional
and bad.
Roller coaster, like ups and downs.
Like, a lot of times her songs make you feel something. I mean, no, songs make you feel something. This one, you were just like, oh, I could dance through the whole thing.
Yeah. This which was definitely like a celebration good. Album.
Yeah. It was just different because you're like, Beyonce, make me cry, make all my, you know, make everything better.
Make me cry, then make everything better. Like, hold me, rock me like a little baby, please. Yeah. Exactly. I do feel like this album, it was really nice considering like 2020, 2021. Like, it's nice to get like a happy album. Definitely not similar to her other albums, but it's nice to get just like a very free, you know, it just sounds like very free. And then you see her on the horse with the, you know, it sounds like, and Blue Ivy's on tour. So that's cool. I'm not part of the Beehive. I can't own that, but I do love Beyonce and I think she's an icon.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not part of the Beehive either, but I still love her.
Okay. I never like to assume when somebody come after me, you know.
I
don't know if y'all saw Swarm, but I saw Swarm and I'm like, I'm not gonna shake up the Beehive because did you see Swarm?
Anthrax in your what's Swarm?
Okay, so Swarm is this, I know I'm getting off track here, but Swarm is this series, and I think Donald Glover did it. So Donald Glover did Atlanta. Childish Gambino. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. He's amazing, by the way. So I think he did Atlanta. The series. Yeah, it's very Atlanta-esque in the way it's filmed. And I wouldn't say the type of acting, but I feel like Donald Glover does like a very authentic, he captures authentic blackness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
In a way that doesn't sound like a white writer wrote it and then a black actor's trying to do what they think that black people do. That might be an in-depth take, but I really like the way he does his shows. And that show is basically like a, I don't want to say a deep dive, but it is like, what if? It's a what if when it comes to the Beehive. And they don't say Beehive, they don't say Beyonce, but it's called Swarm. And like, it's basically a play on like, what if this person that's really obsessed with this pop star, just goes through trauma. Like, what do they do next with this obsession that they have with this person?
I'm going to look that up. I had to write that down.
Yeah, it's intense. I have to say, every episode is intense. So I love watching movies and shows. And that one, yes. So you got to watch it. I want to talk about, like, where you are now, Chandra. Like, what's been going on? I know that you said you're pregnant. I know we've spoken a couple times, but I want you to kind of like what's going on in life nowadays? How are you feeling with the pregnancy? I know you're in your third trimester now.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're almost at the finish line.
Thank God. Yeah.
Well, are you excited? Yes, girl. Are you excited about the pregnancy?
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Yes. So.
And you can be honest.
No, I will go into the story of my pregnancy. So I'm 42 and I've never been married. I've never really even wanted to get married, right? So my daughter's father and I were together for 5 years and she was kind of born at the end of our relationship. And he just wasn't really good with giving me like what I was looking for in a man. Like, he was a great guy, nice, and like we're actually super close right now, which turned out to be kind of weird. But I was like, well, he's not giving me what I want, and I keep telling him about it, so, you know, I gotta go. So, you know, we co-parent well, we have 50-50 with the baby. But, I mean, I knew I wanted to get married, right? So I was like, okay, I'm gonna take a year, at least a year off. But you know when you break up with someone, you're kind of already kind of checked out. So for me, I was kind of broken up with from the relationship for that at least the prior 6 months to a year. So I feel like I was single for a while. So I met a man who I felt we had some things in common, but we also had a lot that wasn't in common. Like, first, he just turned 35, so we're 7 years apart. And he was also incarcerated for 16 years, which is which was from the age of 16 to 32, and now he's 35. But his birthday is 5 days after mine, so this was just like a couple weeks ago. Because we were both in May. So, you know, to me, I feel like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know anyone who's been incarcerated. So I made a lot of assumptions and kind of expectations. And he like really pursued this relationship. And I was like, he was doing all the things, right? And then we met at like a financial event. And I'm like big into that like space. I like investing and thinking about retirement and stuff like that. And so that's what he was into. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is kind of like what my ex was lacking. We were getting along. I was attracted to him, all that. And I was like, and now I'm at the point where I'm kind of ready to get married. So I went into the relationship very open and like very vulnerable. But I was okay with that. Because at this point in life, I mean, I really don't have much to lose. It is what it is. But, yeah.
Do you feel like, so, looking back, like you, that you, do you feel like looking back that you had enough time single?
Yes. Well, yes. I didn't want to be single anymore. And I had, you know, I had did a lot of working on myself. The only thing that I didn't have enough time with is the fact that I'm on this entrepreneurial journey. And then that like really disrupted that. So that was the only thing that I was like, eh, you know, I can't really have a relationship and do all this. I don't have the time. But so emotions-wise. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, y'all met and then it was, there was a lot of things that were in common. Like, y'all clicked when it came to like the views on finances and like being financially stable, and like some of your goals were aligned.
I wanted another child because I think only children can be a little weird at times. Sorry if you're an only child, Ashley.
Oh, I am not. My husband is. I'm, you know, but I am not. I'm an oldest. I have a younger brother, so I'm the oldest. So, very, very much not an only child.
So I was just open with having another kid. And I was like, okay, I'm turning 42. You know, a lot of my friends are doing a journey and IVF journey or something like that. And it was like, I don't even know if I can have a kid. So we talked about it. He didn't have any children, so we were kind of like, you know, let's try it out and see what happens. Yeah, so like 2 days later, I was pregnant,
basically. Wow, talk about manifestation. Girl, you put that in the universe and it came right back.
Yes, it did. Because I had a period, and then I was like, oh, I told him, I talked to him, and I was like, oh, I didn't get pregnant because I'm on my period. No. Like 3 days later, I was laying in bed. It was like 2 a.m, and I felt the most nausea, and I was like, what is this? And so I got a pregnancy test, a digital one, and it came back positive. Yeah, I didn't even know they had this. They had they had this pack. It was like a party pack or something. It had a regular
not
one.
Not a
like...
party pack. Hold on. Not a party pregnancy pack. What are y'all doing in California? Y'all got party pregnancy packs? Pregnancy tests. You and all your friends.
Yeah, right. I say that because there were like multiple tests and they were different types of tests. And I was like, I didn't read the packaging because I wasn't expecting this. So the first one was digital. So it literally said pregnant. And then the second one was the regular with the lines and stuff. And I was like, okay. But the second one, you couldn't really tell because it was so soon.
So and, what was your feeling like when you saw pregnant? Were you excited? Were you like shocked or like, what were you feeling in that moment?
I was excited and shocked. And I thought my mind probably first went to my daughter's father and like, whoa, what is he going to think about this? Because like I said, we're really close and we talk like every day. And our families are really close. He's really close with my family. Cause like I'm the type of person, like if we break up, like I mean, I still love you. We're still cool. Like there's no animosity. Like I could probably call all of my exes and like just have a regular conversation with them. Like I'm friends with all my exes, like, you know, to a point, but,
that's an art because not everybody can do that in a, like a non-toxic way. In a way that's also respectful to whatever they're doing, what, you know, their relationships now. So I think there's an art to being friends with your exes.
Yeah. It's just kind of like feelings gone forever.
Gone forever. The feelings are gone. There's no chance of this. What did Taylor Swift say? We're never, ever getting back together. that little song.
Yeah, it's just like, why go back? But... Yeah. You know, usually when you go back, it's a mistake, but
yeah. So then you find out you're pregnant. And so did you, like, what was his reaction when you told him?
He was so happy.
Really?
Because when he first went to prison, and I'll just go into it a little bit. I mean, he would be fine with it because he's very open about his story and everything like that. So he went to prison for murder at 16, but it was kind of a self-defense thing. He was in a gang. It was gunshots back and forth. And this guy, which I guess was a security guard, happened to die. Mm. So he got life in prison. So, you know, as life in prison, you're not really thinking that you're ever going to come out and just have a child. So for him, it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. He had gotten married while he was there, so you get conjugal visits when you get married, but I guess she never got pregnant during that time years ago. So he came out and it's the first baby for his mom. Like she doesn't have any grandkids, and like his dad has a grandchild that he doesn't talk to because of the relationship with the dad. So this is like a first for his family. He is not an only child, but like for his mom, like his mom has a son now, but he's only like 7 or something. So he was the only child for a long time. Oh, because his parents had him when they were both around 18.
Okay.
So yeah. So then, you know, he got into
it. He was excited to like, this is, I finally get my chance. Like his, what he thought his life was going to be. Took a sudden shift in his 30s when he got out, and then he gets into this relationship, and then it's kind of like everything you guys wanted kind of came to fruition as far as like getting to a relationship and then getting pregnant. And so what kind of happens next? Because I know, I feel like it's got to be a huge shift for him mentally, going from one way of living where you're incarcerated to being out and now trying to figure out like, what do I do next?
Well, they have like a lot of, you know, services for people who are coming back into the world, like to get, you know, used to everything that's happening. He actually works for ARC, which is Anti-Recidivism Coalition. So there's a whole bunch of things that they can work on. Like they have the last mile, like he worked there also, and they help formerly incarcerated people become coders and engineers and things like that.
Okay, so they give
So
them
there's
like real
all
life
sorts of stuff.
skills, work skills.
Yeah. So all that was good. I mean, they have housing for them, all that. His family is also very supportive of him. So he had all that, you know, going for him, which was nice. And plus, he would put, like, I don't want to say play the stock market, but he would buy stocks and stuff while he was already incarcerated.
Oh,
Trade
like trade.
options, things like that.
Oh, that's smart. That's really smart. So at that point, like you're pregnant, you've told him, how was what you felt then different than like, I don't know, a couple months in? Like, did things start to change? How did that go as your pregnancy went on?
Yes, girl.
If you want to
So,
share,
no.
cuz I feel like being pregnant is a whole like it's a whole shift in and of itself, especially, I mean, I know you've been pregnant before and this is your second child, but I still feel like no matter how many times you get pregnant and like being responsible for another human being that like you're literally just growing him in your belly, that's a huge shift, you know, and it requires, I would think, a lot of support and communication and feeling like secure.
Yeah,
But I don't want to put
definitely.
words in your mouth.
No, definitely. Like that was really a part of my depression per se. Like first, I mean, I have a 3-year-old, so having a 3-year-old and being pregnant is a whole nother situation because 3-year-olds are full of energy. So trying to keep up with her is very difficult. I'll have to say, like, knowing I'm gonna see her for a week and I'm like, woo, nervous, like this girl. But when it came to him, at first I had expectations. I had expectations of, like, I really wanted my second pregnancy to feel super supportive and do the whole like baby moon thing and just like, I just saw it differently because me and my daughter's father were not married, and I just wanted it to be different this time, right? And it just wasn't. And I, you know, that was me. I should have definitely not been as vulnerable, not just fell into it like, okay, this is going to be the one, we're going to get married and da-da-da, and just been more intentional. But you know, all kids are blessings, so it is what it is. But he,
So I know you said like you kind of at some point you started to get depressed. Like, so was there a particular trigger that started to make you get depressed? Like, was it just a point in the pregnancy, or was it like a shift, a change that happened between within the relationship? Like, what kind of, or did anything trigger it? I know sometimes depression is just may not be necessarily triggered by anything. It's just can kind of come. It's just like the cloud is there. So, how did that happen for you?
Well, aside from, you know, the hormones, we're having conflicts. Like we were arguing about things. I mean, but to me, I mean, you know, when you live in a world and you date a lot and stuff like that, like you're kind of used to that, especially when you're getting to know someone. So, I mean, basically, we could say like this, like I met him in June of last year. We didn't really start dating until November. And I was pregnant before December, basically. So we were getting to know each other, and you know, we were having conflicts, and the way we deal with that was very different. Like, you know, we've lived in me and you, we've lived in the world, we've dated. You go through conflicts, it's just a part of life, right? For him, conflict isn't like that. Conflict has been abuse, it's been control, it's been in prison. It's a different type of way of looking at it, you know? So for me, I'm like, we have conflict, it makes us stronger, right? For him, it's like, no, I can't. I've had so much conflict in my life, you know? I had the abuse when I was young. I had, you know, the same stuff in prison. Like, I can't do that. So he kind of checked out of the relationship. And for me, I'm like totally hurt, you know, because I mean, he was still around. It's not like I didn't see him, but he was checked out in a way that I didn't realize because he didn't really tell me. And like, to me, you know, you communicate, we have to communicate that. So we're having a baby. So right. When he did end up telling me that, I was just like,
yeah, wait. That's shocking. Like, that's hard.
Yeah. That's... And then, he had some things with like some DMs with some women and it was just like,
that doesn't make you feel great. Woo. And you're like, I'm pregnant over here. And on top of us not being able to resolve conflict, now you're starting new conversations with new people.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it wasn't, you know, all him. I was definitely, you know, I was like, I want you to do, you know, I need this, I need this, I need this, I want you to be like this, da, da, da. So it was back and forth. It was both of us. But, you know, I felt like, okay, you know, we'll have some conflict. We'll get to know each other more. We'll get through it and everything will be okay. But yeah, once.
So you always saw the light at the end of the tunnel. And for him, it was more like, I'm just going to shut down because this is like reminiscent of my past in terms of conflict itself. Even if the conflict was different.
Right. Because, it's kind of like a lot of past stuff. Because, I mean, I don't think normally we think about it, but when you go to somewhere like prison, like, all the reasons why you went into into prison, they're kind of, like, never resolved, you know, in a way. Like, he grew up having an abusive parent and then join this gang because he didn't have the support at home. And then the death happened and then he's in prison. So it's kind of like, you know, you never really learn from that it doesn't change, even though prison probably saved his life, but still. So like one time we were having a conversation and he was talking about positive reinforcement. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I mean, I'm having your baby. Like, I don't know what you mean by positive reinforcement. So one thing, like, I'm really big into men who work out, who have a fitness, like, mindset. I think that's important. It's not necessarily the looks. It's more of, I want to be healthy.
Yeah.
Right? So that I told him that was a deal breaker for me. And he's like, oh, yeah, I love working out. But he wasn't at the time. So we would have some issues with that a little bit. So
is that just like, does that come from your concern of like, I want you to take care of yourself so you can be here longer?
Because as a pharmacist, like, we're big on prevention.
Yeah.
So keeping your weight down and working out are like the two factors that prolong your life like the most, you know, unless there's something else. Underline, like, that's what it is.
Yeah. I think
losing weight, working out.
I'm interested to hear that from you, like, because we have to remember, like, your background as a pharmacist and you're in the medical field. And so you're seeing the direct effects of, like, when people are not leading a healthy lifestyle. So it makes sense why that's a high priority for you.
Yeah. And, you know, and you get a lot of people get to older decades and then they're like, I don't want to take the medications, but it's like, well, you know, in the decades before, you weren't eating well, you weren't working out, prevention, you weren't healthy. Yeah. So it's kind of like, now you're at this point where we have to make interventions and you can still, I mean, and a lot of times people can still get healthy or work on it while you have medications. Like, a lot of people can change their life and get off medications, you know, but that's that's hard. That's difficult, but it's very, very possible, but it's a life change. So that's why it's mostly been important to me. And then, you know, I was telling him, you know, we were talking about it one day, and he's like, well, you know, I would like it if he showed me some pictures of him when he was like more in shape. And he's like, you could have looked at those pictures and said, oh, I really like that you look like that. It makes, you know, I'm attracted to that. Like saying positive things in order to get him on that path. And for me, I'm like, well, you know, fitness is kind of a personal journey. There's nothing that I can do to make you work out for the most part. So, and then we talked about it a little bit more, and, you know, I was like, well, to me, positive reinforcement is for animals and children. Right? I know that sounds really bad.
It does. I'm not gonna lie. That sounds terrible. You said this is for animals, for my dog, and for children. But I guess are you because I'm assuming that you're thinking like positive reinforcement typically, it sounds like what he wants is parental positive reinforcement. And I think maybe in a relationship, as a partner, you don't want to feel like somebody's asking you to be their parent. Like that's what I avoid in my relationship, is like starting to feel like I'm taking on like a more maternal role in certain aspects of relationships, because no woman wants to feel like they're mothering their partner.
Right. That's really what it was. I'm just, you know, saying it like that, like, not sugarcoating it. But it's like, it's just like, okay, like once we get to adulthood, we don't get positive reinforcement for the things we do wrong. You do something wrong, you gotta fix it.
You have to pay for it.
You spend too much on your credit card, you gotta pay it off. You drive too fast, you get a ticket. Like that's just what it is. Like it's not, you know, you have to fix it yourself. And you know, we get used to that, right?
Yeah.
If you don't take care of yourself, you get sick. So
his inner child wants positive reinforcement, you know, because he went in so young, and that may be something similar to how like some people want to be, how do I say this? Like some people want to be like kind of coddled, or like, I don't want to say coddled, but, I feel like sometimes the things that we lack growing up are the things that we need as adults, and you have to figure out where you can get those, that you can get your cup filled. And sometimes that's not your partner. Sometimes it's a therapist. Sometimes it is a mentor. Sometimes it's like a father figure or an uncle or like a mother figure that's not your partner. But I think I can get it from both ends of like, it sounds like he understands what he needs, but maybe not understanding like where to get that from.
Yeah, because when he said, because he gave me an example, and he's like, well, when I was younger and my mom would tell me to do something, and like she would have hit him or whatever, however many times, he's like, I kept doing it. He's like, I realized that negative reinforcement, I didn't like it, didn't work for me. And as I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, well, it's different because you were in an abusive relationship with your mother. Mm-hmm. So that's not the same thing as negative reinforcement. And you weren't getting positive reinforcement. So you kind of never, you didn't really have that in your life. It was abuse and it was rough. So that made me think, oh yeah, like this is probably something you need to fix from way before me. Like I can't really give this to you, and you want this. Mm-hmm. So that's what made me, you know, go to your conclusions exactly, like the parental thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it was kind of like, at this point, you know, it's like if you're not, you know, seeking therapy, if you're not fixing, like him and his mom are not estranged, like they're pretty close. Yeah. But if you guys are going to ignore these things that you have, then there's probably not a place for me in your life at this point. You know what I mean? It's like at that point I had to like think about like my knowledge as a medical professional and think like, what can you really give me if this is your, if your thought process is, you know, way back here, that of things like that you want, you know, your expectations for me. So
they're not really in alignment. It sounds like he, it sounds like he, what he needs is not necessarily what you can provide, but it also sounds like what you need, he may not at this time be able to provide that for you.
Right.
So where does, where does that leave you? Like, you're in a relationship and start to kind of like make these connections, right? So you guys go from being in like, I won't call it a honeymoon phase, but kind of like a really happy phase early on. And then, of course, like a baby is coming into the world, and now I feel like things start getting, I don't want to say more intense, but maybe like you start really thinking long term, like 2 years, 5 years, what does it look like when the baby's going to kindergarten and you have to go talk to the teacher, like starting to think about things like that. So as you, like, I know you said that you went into a depression, and like, how did you deal with that? I know you also live with anxiety as well. So how do you start to like manage that or deal with that while being pregnant and also being a mother to a 3-year-old and also being a pharmacist and anxiety coach? I feel like there's a, like, what, how do you handle all that?
That is kind of where my YouTube channel came in. Because I know that as an anxiety coach, you have to put yourself in those uncomfortable situations. You have to kind of be vulnerable. You can't just sit around and live with what you're going through inside of you. You know what I mean? And that was like, just stepping back, when it comes to my daughter's father, I had really bad anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I had to, you know, realize that it's because of this relationship, and I had to go. And after I left the relationship, I felt so much freer. So I didn't feel comfortable really putting the whole situation with the pregnancy on Instagram, which I'm more active on. But I was like, on YouTube, nobody knows really who I am. So I was able to really like put it out there as just, and feel open, because I'm a pretty blunt person. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really helpful for me. I could be vulnerable.
It was like cathartic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I could be vulnerable. I mean, people from my Instagram did, you know, hear it and contact me and things like that. But it was kind of like
it a sounds journal like you're doing a journal. Exactly. I was about to say that. It sounds like you're doing like a visual journal. Because I've obviously been on your YouTube and I've watched the videos. I watched some of the videos, and I think just being able to talk about things, even if it's, and y'all know, everybody knows that's listening knows I'm very pro therapy. Like that's usually like the first place I'm going to, like, if my friend's going through something, I'm going to ask, do you need somebody to talk to? But I also understand that's not the only way to cope with, like when your mental health is kind of like in a lull. So I think I love that you started a YouTube, because it takes a lot of vulnerability to put yourself out on the interwebs knowing that it's just there. Like, you know, but also it's there forever. But also, like, you, I think that being able to share in, especially to like a new community, like you said, there are people that have come over from like the Instagram community over to YouTube, but essentially YouTube is like its own community in and of itself. It's a different way of like making content. But also, I think some of the best, I don't want to say best channels, but yeah, some of the best channels are the ones where people are just like being authentic about what they're going through. And I think when I watch your videos, I'm like, wow, like this is a lot that you're dealing with, but hearing you kind of talk through it, and you know, it's like when you're doing that visual journal, similar to like you're writing in a journal, you're kind of working things out as you speak them. You know, and it's not sitting on your chest.
Yeah, I think I mean, journaling always to me always sounds like cliche, but it's so helpful. Like it's just such a deep dive, and you know when you say, I mean, if you record yourself or if you write it down, like you don't judge yourself as much. Like, you know, that's like scientifically, that's really one thing that it does for you, is it allows you to put down your feelings, put down your emotions, and then think through them. Instead of, you know, you're in your mind and there's so much going on and everything like that. And then also it allowed me to it was kind of like an affirmation in a way also, because the time before I actually could put up the video or start recording the video, I had to really like, okay, I can do this. Like, I can talk about this thing or...
It's a brave thing. It takes a lot of courage to put yourself out there.
Yeah, so exactly. And I have to think, you know, I have two girls. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, I want them to think about these things and be brave. And I want them to be able to not have anxiety, mm-hmm. you know, like their mom if possible. And it's just like, we have to be active. We have to do all the things like as much as possible. Like, I mean, I've definitely had lots of times where I laid down on the couch or in the bed and cried and everything like that. And I mean, to me, that's also, you know, crying is also cathartic, and I'll always let myself cry it out if I have to. But I just think, you know, as Black women, like, we're always expected to be so strong all the time, and I was like breaking down. So even though like I was being brave and everything, I was still living in my vulnerability, the same vulnerability that I had when I got into the relationship. It was like, I'm just gonna keep this going, because even though it's a scary place to be, it's like a freeing place to be, because at least I have, you know, I have no regrets for the most part. I mean, regardless of the baby, I mean, for my life, it was okay. I'm older. I have a career. Like, the things were in place for me to be able to have the second child and feel okay with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would definitely say for women who are, you know, younger in your 20s, like, you're still building, not like you can't be vulnerable, but
it's harder.
It's just a different, it's a different place. Yeah. It's definitely
harder when you're younger.
Yeah. It's definitely a different place to be. It's a different type of vulnerability. So
how are
you
feeling now though? Like, how are you feeling now? I know that you've got, obviously got the YouTube channel, not to say that's going to just cure everything, but are you feeling like a little bit lighter? Are you feeling like you are making your way out of this depression?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I feel I'm in a way different place. Like I'm for the most part undepressed anymore. Like I went to last week. I had a doctor's appointment. She's like, do you feel like hurting yourself or anything like that? I was like, oh no, emotionally I feel a lot better. Like
that's good.
Him and I we're still working on our communication, mm-hmm. but I kind of let the thoughts of a relationship go.
So you've realigned your expectations of what that mm-hmm. partnership looks like once the baby comes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I definitely did. So that was helpful for me. I mean, because at the end of the day, it's him being as happy and sane as possible, me being that way, and also the baby. Yeah. You know, being that way. So it's like, what needs to happen for that to happen? Like, maybe we're not compatible and that's fine. I'm not going to fight it to feel like sometimes people will be like, oh, you know, we're staying together for the kids. And I'm just one of those people that think that that's really damaging unless you can really pull it together or you can really become good friends.
I agree.
Me and my daughter's father, Will, like, we're really good friends. Mm-hmm. Like, his family's in New York mostly. So he'll be with my family Christmas, Thanksgiving, you know, all those things. And he's very welcome. And that's just, you know, the way it is. So he's like my family, mm-hmm. even though, you know, we had our issues when we were together.
But I think that's a beautiful thing is co-parenting. I think it's good for people to hear that co-parenting in a healthy way is possible. Even if, I mean, it's great that y'all are really good friends. But I also realize that not everybody gets that like luxury of being able to separate, divorce, and the relationship and there's children involved and still somehow come back to being good friends that can co-parent and make decisions together and communicate really well. I think some people struggle, but the fact that I think it's important to tell those, to share these things. Like I come from, my mom's been divorced twice and like my dad is my brother's father, but they've been divorced since, I don't know, I'm 33 now. So like 28 years? Mm-hmm. No, 20, over 20 years. But I will say that I would say 90% of the time, it was really healthy. Not to say that there weren't ups and downs and stuff, but I think that, at least from my point of view, I think from my point of view, they had a really good co-parenting style, and there wasn't like visible friction from what I could see. So I think that just changes the way children grow up, because I think so many people, like you said, they'll just stay together. And I think that it's healthier for children to see two parents be able to communicate well and to share time and to make decisions and to resolve conflict separately in a healthy way, rather than not being able to resolve conflict in a healthy way, rather than there being a lot of friction living under one roof because y'all don't like each other, you're not attracted to each other. There may be other things going on outside of the household. And that means there's animosity. And so I think living in a world where that is the case is very unhealthy. And I think, like you said, it is damaging to stay together for the kids when the kids aren't dumb. Like kids know when things are not dumb with mommy and daddy. Cause it's a lot more obvious than what people think. I'm saying everybody should go and get divorced, but I think what you're saying is if you're going to stay together, you have to do the work, because at the end of the day, it's about like a healthy environment for children, whether that's co-parenting or living under one roof.
Yeah. And you have to like accept that you guys are different, accept that you broke up, accept so many things, so many bad things happen. Like kids become pawns in relationships. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times people just, you don't accept that it's over. You don't accept that you're different people. You don't accept the fact that you're not living by society's standards of being in, you know, this loving relationship, even though that's a misconception.
There's no love.
Because,
that is,
because all relationships are hard.
Yeah, I think that there's like, I think society is like really kind of, I have a whole view about like society and what the expectations that it puts on everybody, regardless of gender, when it comes to relationships, because I feel like we've created this like two parent, two kids, like white picket fence. This is how, mm-hmm. you know, the man is supposed to be, this is how the woman is supposed to be. And then, you know, in order to be good people, you have to maintain this for your entire life. And either be happy, and if you're not happy, then deal with it because you can't separate it. And then if you add religion on top of that, there's a whole nother set of not only expectations, but repercussions that come with, like, if you don't maintain that. So I have a very different view of relationships, and it really just stems from, like, if you are compatible and you love each other and you are friends, and I always say, like, you should be friends before you are in a relationship, because at the end of the day, like there's going to be some days where you're like, oof, like you're not feeling it, they're not feeling it. But if you have a basis of like a friendship, then I think you can make it work, you know, especially like if you, like for you and your ex, I'm assuming that you guys had some foundation of friendship there that you've maintained even after like the romantic relationship has ended.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's a great guy. Like, he's like a frat boy surfer. I mean, not really, but that's kind of his personality. Like, everyone loves Will. Like, it's just what it is. So, you know, I had to just definitely think about who he was, who he is just as a person. You know, and also it's like, okay, wait. Okay. I went like now, like, okay, so he's single. I'm single. We're in our 40s. I mean, you're married, so congrats to you.
Thanks, girl.
It's a beautiful thing.
Thanks, girl.
But
it's not for everybody, though. Like this is something it's not for everybody. Like, I fully respect when people are like, I have no desire to get married. And I fully respect when people are like, I have no desire to have kids. Like, for me, a lot of people don't know that even though I've been married, I've been with my husband for like 10 years. We've been married for like 5. But before I met him, I was kind of like floating. I'm a child of like two divorces. Mm-hmm. So growing up, I was like, maybe I'll get married. Maybe I won't. But I never had dreams of like, I'm going to be in a white dress. And this is what I want my wedding to look like. And this is what I want my kids to look like. Like, I have friends that, you know, they've had those dreams since we first met, you know, and they meet men or they're dating guys in high school. And it's like, this is my dream for this person. And like, I want them to fit in this dream that I have. Mm-hmm. And I get that. Like, that's fine. I think my goals in life are just very different. Not that that's better or worse, is they're just different. And I always said, you know, if I meet, I would hope to meet somebody and I just want a life partner. So if I meet that person and they never want to get married and they just want to spend our lives together, like, that's fine with me. If I meet this person and they're like, I want to marry you. For me, marriage is, I respect what marriage is. But for me, if we're going to be together, we're going to be together regardless of if we're going to be married or not, you know?
Yeah.
So the fact that we get married is like, great. Yeah, it's different, but it's not for everybody. And I wish more people would accept that they shouldn't have to like have this. Like, if you don't want it, don't just do it because society has told you to do it.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. Like, you know, that was a lot of being 42 and being pregnant and not, and being single still. But even though I'm way happier that I'm single and I feel blessed that I'm able to be in this situation and be happy, you know, because when we talk about relationships and being 50-50, and I think a lot of relationship experts now can kind of put it in a such a great light. They say, you know, it's nothing's 50-50. It's more like, can you guys be 100? Can you be each other's the rest of their 100? Like, if you're 20 today, can I be 80 for you? You know, and vice versa. If you don't have anything, can I be the full 100, you know, on this day? And that's just what it is. And it's, I mean, it's hard to find that at times. And yeah, I mean, and that's okay. And I think if you are able to find that person who can, you know, like, that's, you know, I'm assuming that's probably you and your husband sometimes. Like, sometimes Ashley is having an anxious day.
Like, sometimes I'm 5. You gotta be the 90.
Right? Sometimes I'm 5. Sometimes I'm 1.1.
Sometimes I'm 0.3. It's like, whew. I'm sorry, but today is not the day. This week is not the week. But it's 100% because it's definitely not 50-50, no matter how you want to cut it. Like, it's a fluctuation. And yeah, I also think that every relationship is different. And again, it goes back to like, what does society tell us that we should do? What does society tell us that relationships should look like? And if you align with those, because that's genuinely what you want in like your heart, mind, and soul, and you're like, actually, I want everything that society has told me I should get. Awesome. Like, go for it. Work hard at it. Like, be intentional about, you know, about the relationship that you're having. But I think like, if you are happy where you're at, or if you're happy doing things slightly differently, as long as you're not hurting anybody, like the fact that you can say, you know, I'm pregnant and I'm 42 and I'm good. Like, I'm stable. I have a career. I know that when the baby comes, I can, you know, I'm going to be able to give her the best home, and she's going to have a great, great older sister, and like she's going to have see a great co-parenting like realm of, you know, your daughter's father and her father. And you, and I think if you can create a healthy environment, that's the goal, right? It doesn't matter what society thinks. It doesn't matter if society thinks you should just, no. I think you got to do what's best for yourself, which is ultimately what's going to be best for your child, you know?
Yeah, that's what, you know, has to happen, and that's okay. You know, I think my thing after this is I would still like to, I don't know. I think about marriage. Like, my parents have been married. They're still married. Mm-hmm. I think I would like to get married. I mean, it seems very, very difficult. Especially, I mean, because now, I mean, I've been single. I mean, I live alone. Well, when, except when my daughter's here. And, like,
hold now on, when you say very difficult, are you talking about marriage, being married to somebody else? Like, the actual marriage is difficult? Or finding someone to marry, to like get married to, is difficult?
Okay, let me ask you this. So when it comes to thinking about a relationship, like, say if you were single, hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
Okay, so women want, what do we want? We want security. We want someone to be there for us. We want stability. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just big into those things, right?
Yeah.
It's foundational, like, that's what we want.
Okay.
Men, you know, they want to be, they want the same thing, but they more want, they want to feel good. They want to feel not stressed. They want to be able to come home and you are, like, their warm place, right?
I agree with that, yeah.
They want you to be feminine, in your feminine essence, your feminine energy, as much as possible, because men are attracted to that, right?
Yeah. And well, I will say, for me, from my perspective, I can't say men want blank, women want blank, because I do think everybody wants something slightly different. You know what I mean? As much as we can say, okay, all women want this thing, and all men want this thing, I don't think it's true. I think that that is part of the reason why people end up in situations, because they think they've got to fit into what society has told them that they want. Now, if we, like, all those things that you mentioned, I agree with them, because that's what I want. And, you know, that's what I wanted in my relationship. But I know there's got to be people listening that are like, actually, no. You know, so I have to, I always try to, like, remind myself that just because I want it, or just because society has said that's what people want, doesn't mean that's what everybody actually wants. You know what I mean?
True. I think the roles can be flip-flopped. Like, I believe in masculine and feminine. Like, you, like, it doesn't, like, doesn't matter if you're, like, a cisgender or you're queer or anything like that. Like, usually there's a more masculine and then there's a more feminine. And they tend to kind of come together. Even if those roles are liquid and, you know, intertwined. Like,
kind of fluid and can ebb and flow. Yeah, I get
you. It's just, we just kind of take on that, those energies at times. It's just, they're a part of us, right? Because we have estrogens, we have testosterone, we have those hormones inside of us. So we kind of, you know, are kind of like that. Because, I mean, I'm a very, like, when you're a single mom, you're super masculine. Like, you're living your masculine all day. Yes. And I think to myself, look, I need a man that takes me out of that situation. Because you have to survive, and that's what it is. And the definition of, like, that masculine energy is, you know, you do what you need to do. You do what has to be done. You take on that strong role.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think a lot of women who are this age, and I'm only speaking for cisgender women, you know, because there's a whole bunch of differences everywhere. But, you know, we want someone who takes us out of our masculine, because we're like, you know, working all the time, like, we're cleaning, like, we're making sure everything is good. But it's like, how do I get out of that space at times when I meet a man and he wants me to just, like, be in my feminine energy all the time, or be very giving and be very light and flowery and
I think it takes a lot of soft. I think they have to kind of, I don't want to say earn, but yeah, I think you have to kind of earn that, because that comes with trust, that comes with time. Because I imagine, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine throughout this pregnancy, as different peaks and valleys in the relationship happen, part of like the survival mechanism for women, when we realize, okay, I might have to do this on my own, like you're saying, is that masculine coming forth, because you kind of have to start to embody both. Like, you have to start to be 100% for yourself. Like, we're talking about 50-50. Well, you're doing 100% on your own. So in order for somebody to come in and for you to trust them to start to take on 5, 10, 50, 20, and get to 40, 50, 60, 70, you have to trust them. And I think that just takes time. Like, I think that takes time and just getting to know people. And I think it takes somebody else that's understanding when they come into the relationship that that's where you're at. And you're going to have to meet me where I'm at, and then we can kind of go forth from there, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes I think of it as what came first, the chicken or the egg. Sometimes I it's like, who goes first? Like, who, you know, like, society is like, oh, the man should go first all the time. Like, the man should take you out, right?
Right.
The man should do these things, say these things, pay for these things. But it's not, like you said, it's not always like that.
It's not black and white.
it's not. And it's just like, well, the woman, you know, regardless of if I'm always my 100%, if my man comes over to my place, I'm, you know, I have to switch over in a way.
Yeah.
You know, I have to let all that go. And so I think that is rough right now, being older, because you kind of get, we've been living in society, you know, I've been living in society for 42 years, and things have definitely changed, and we're, as a society, we're definitely more open and things like that. But you get kind of stuck. So trying to navigate through that and be open about it is, I think a lot of people deal with that right now when it comes to, you know, being in relationships and having the anxiety. You know, like my friend was dating a guy, and she's like, I don't believe that he cares about me if he doesn't call me every day. She's like, not text messages. I need him to call me. And so she was really stressed about that, you know, and she was like, the last time I talked to him was 2 days ago, and really, really anxious about what was happening. But it's like, you're kind of putting your own expectation on him. And me being a natural texter, I'm like, girl.
You're like texting, you're like, actually.
Right. I'm like, I mean, I wouldn't be calling you either. But
yeah. I think it has so much to do with like finding somebody that fits with what you're looking for. Like, first being honest with yourself about what you want, and also finding somebody else that aligns with what, you know, what they want is in alignment. But like we see now, like, you could find that and things could shift. So it's like, I think it's just like the ebb and flow of life. Like, life just kind of is like a wave, and you ride the wave, and like, as you go through, you learn more about yourself and like what you want. You learn more about, you know, okay, when I date again, this is going to be like the tweak in what I'm looking for. I think society makes it seem like, oh, it's really easy just to like find the one, get married, have kids, and then like, if you stay together for like 60 years, then like, you're the greatest couple on the planet. Well, I feel like there's a lot of people that have been together for 50, 60 years that are in great relationships. And there are some that are like, ooh, I hate this. So, right. You know, I know that's probably like an unpopular opinion, but
it's the truth.
Relationships have to be, you have to do the best. You have to be in alignment in what you both want, but also like understand that if you don't, if you're not in alignment and you're not planning on getting in alignment, it's okay to like not be with that person.
Yeah, so. It is. Yeah, you're spoken like a true woman who has fought anxiety. Because that's, you know, that's yeah. kind of the place where, you know, you have to be. It's how I stopped having panic attacks is you know, you accept, you think about, you know, you're just, it's hard to like be anxious and fight it and be stuck in your ways. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You realize one day, okay, my body, my mind, my heart, my soul doesn't like the way I'm doing this. Like, my subconscious is like, your conscious is tripping. Like, you need to change it.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So, yes. Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah. So just, you know, it's definitely a lot of like, you know, people say we have to know ourselves and we have to spend time like with ourselves and things like that. You know, sometimes we just got to tell ourselves, look, you're not doing the right thing today. You got to think about it differently.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of thinking.
Right. Because really, you know, that's what therapy is, right? Your therapist is helping you think about the things that are hurt, that you're hurting, how you're hurting yourself, like how you're stuck in this way. And it's, and your subconscious is like, no. Right? Yes. I mean, that's how I think about it at times. Agree.
That's kind of how I go through therapy is like, I need help untangling this. Like, you know, when you go to when you see those little pictures of the cats playing with like a ball of yarn and it's like the yarn is all tangled up. That's what I feel like is in my brain. And then I go to therapy and I slowly like untangle some of it. And then like life happens and the ball gets like thrown against the wall and like rolls down a hill and then it's all tangled up again. And then I go back to therapy and I'm like, okay, we're going to work on the other side of the ball now. Now I got to untangle this. So it's just, it is a lot of like rewiring, I think, so that you get to a place where you can navigate through life. But also, you know, not just therapy, but like you said, having a visual journal, having a written journal. Like I know there's so many different ways to cope, going to like a group therapy or just like having a mentor that you can talk to. I think there's a lot of different ways to deal with life, but and I'm also like, I just want to say I'm excited for you and this like little new human that you're bringing into the world. I can't wait to see her. I really hope that things go smoothly, and I hope that you have like a great rest of your pregnancy. I know you're almost to the finish line, so you're almost there. You're gonna be eating chicken, rice, and beans every day for the, I don't know how the
right every day until I can't, you know.
And then you're gonna like hate it once you give birth. You're gonna be like, oh, don't show me chicken. I don't even want to see a chicken wing.
Right, I'm out here representing the geriatric mothers.
Okay, all the geriatric mothers, and they need to create a new term because I'm sick and tired of that.
So bad, new term.
So bad. Like, can we get a new term? I went to the doctor, and they're like, you know, you're getting close to like at this point, you'd have a geriatric pregnancy. I'm like, thank you. I know what it's called. You know, no need. Can we just call it a Jerry pregnancy? I think that's cuter, right? Little Jerry pregnancy, Gigi pregnancy. That's cute.
Right? A Gigi pregnancy.
Gigi pregnancy. That's what I'm calling it from now on. A Gigi pregnancy, because geriatric pregnancy is a man had to have made that up. Like an old like man had to have been like 32 geriatric. Like
right.
Just like old. Just, and there's nothing wrong with being old, but it's like, dang, geriatric. We're just gonna call it a Gigi pregnancy. So I hope that you have a good rest of your Gigi pregnancy. But, you know, just being real, I hope that you continue to start to feel good and like make your way out of a depression, because I can't imagine being depressed and pregnant. That's a lot to deal with.
No, I'm good. I definitely went from wanting to abort the baby to you know, now trying to get this baby room together. So yeah. It's been good.
That's a hell of a journey though, to go from. That's a lot of, I mean, I can't blame you for your mental health, like just taking a hit during your pregnancy. That's a lot of, there's so many decisions that I think people that like get pregnant and have to make a decision about, okay, do I want a baby? Can I do this? Okay, I'm going to do it. And then there's a whole host of other things that you start to think about. So thank you, Chandra, for coming back on the pod. I appreciate you. I always love catching up with you. I just want to say thank you for your vulnerability in telling your story today, because I don't think it's an easy thing to talk about. But I appreciate you sharing, because I know you're not the only person in a situation like this. So I appreciate you always hopping on the mic with me.
You know, definitely the anxiety that single mothers have is really important to me. There's so many single moms, and their mental health, I think, is ignored at times because they don't have a husband at, you know, when people think that they should. And it's, you know, we don't always meet the person that's for us. Yeah. You know, at the time we want to meet them. So shout out to my future husband out there.
Okay. If you're listening, her information is going to be in the description. Oh man. No, but thank you again for coming on. Like I appreciate you coming on and then talking about your journey. We got to get back on the mic soon, maybe before the baby comes and you get super busy. Let's hop back on the mic soon and you know, we'll find some more good topics to talk about. But yeah. I appreciate you, and you're always welcome back. You know that. Door's open. Wide open.
Thank you. Yeah, I you know, I definitely have some tips for women out there to help with looking at anxiety in their children, noticing things. 'Cause even at 3, I notice things in my daughter that I realize I have to deal with. Yeah. So I want, you know, it's very important to me that we bring in a new generation of mentally stable, you know, black children.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. But also black children that have the tools when their mental health is not stable, you know, when they are going through like the hills and valleys of life, that they have the tools to get through that. So, yes. And I want you to tell the people, like, where can they find you? Tell them, like, where they can find you on YouTube, on IG, if somebody's interested in anxiety coaching, where do they find you?
Yeah, so I'm mostly on IG. I am Dr. Chandra Lynn. Lynn is my middle name, but it's shorter than Smallwood. So, yeah, I am Dr. Chandra Lynn. I'm on TikTok. I'm on YouTube, just Dr. Chandra Smallwood. I'm trying my hardest to do daily or every other day YouTubes. So anyone who has any questions, please hit me up. Oh, I redid my book. It's actually called Silent Suicide. Now it's a book about anxiety, you know, because anxiety is something that we have to deal with and we have to work on, because it really chips away at our mental health as well as our physical health. So the suicide part is, we have to have like a fitness mindset. Like we have to go into these mental health things thinking we have to put in the work, you know, even temporary work. So I have that going. I have a coaching program. You can just hit me up on IG. I can send you my email if you want.
Yeah, I think I have your email. I'll make sure all of it is in the description for sure.
Yeah, they tend, since my name is so long, it tends to be a little long. It's like Dr. Chandra Smallwood at chandrasmallwood.com or something.
It's okay. My email is blackgirlshaveanxiety2@gmail.com, and I thought about definitely it short, and I was like, nah, we're just going to go with it. I'm just going to roll with it. It's the easiest thing to say.
Right, but someone forgets one letter, and they're like, I can't find you.
Yeah, the email comes back. Yeah, I know, you got to type the whole thing in. Every letter.
I know, I know.
No, but so, thank yeah, you so no, much.
I love talking with you, Ashley.
Yes.
It's, you're awesome. This is an awesome podcast.
You. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm trying, girl. And when I'm back on the West Coast, we gotta get together. I gotta come see the baby. Come see you and the babies. But definitely linking up soon. But thank you so much again for being here. Thank you to everybody that is listening. I'll make sure you have all the links that you need to get in touch with Chandra after this episode. Also, if you're new to the podcast or if you haven't listened to her other episodes, I know we did an episode on breathing exercises. Scroll back a little bit. Make sure you download and listen to those episodes. They're great episodes, super insightful. As you can see, she's super intelligent. She had like the whiteboard out at one point and like created a poster and was taking us through the whole steps of the nervous system, of how anxiety attacks your nervous system. So make sure you guys go back and listen to those if you haven't already. Thank you so much to everybody that's listening. Y'all are amazing. I'm going to have more great guests on soon. Episodes will still be bi-weekly for the rest of the summer because, you know, life is still very much lifing. And
lifey.
So I am I will see y'all in a couple weeks, and in the meantime go download some old episodes. But thanks again for listening, and I will see y'all next time. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety Too. No matter where you are in the world, I really appreciate your support. See you again on the next episode, but until then, follow us on Instagram at Black Girls Have Anxiety Too and on Twitter at Anxious Black Girls. That's Anxious BLK Girls. And remember, just because you're struggling doesn't mean you have to struggle in silence. The more we talk about it, the more we heal.